Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Depending on where you are tuning in from, thank you very much. This is Darcy Butkus, also known as Inspector Bark. I'm going to be your host for the next 15 to 20 minutes, where I brought in a volunteer, an ex-volunteer from some time back, that volunteered for Animal Aid. For those of you that may not be aware, we did a segment this past Wednesday. You can go on to Inspector Bark Facebook page and find the link, and you can listen in at your leisure. It is a two-hour recorded session. We have part two coming up this Wednesday, March 14th at 6:30 p.m. Part two of the Animal Neglect, Cruelty, and Greed. We will have other ex-volunteers and ex-fosters that are coming forward and speaking on what they experienced while they were there working or volunteering at Animal Aid. Some of them are going to be mainly speaking from Broward County. As you know, we had Tracy Schneider, the ex-caretaker, who spoke and was interviewed last week from Collier County, the so-called animal sanctuary that is being taken over by panthers and many, many cats. Several have gone missing and have shown up dead. So right now on the line, I have an ex-volunteer, Barbara. I'm going to bring her on the air right now. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi, Darcy.
Barbara, I want the listeners to hear how we became friends through the animal rescue world. I will preface this by saying that you had apparently seen through the internet or on social media the pre-interview on Tuesday of last week with Tracy Schneider, the ex-caretaker over at the animal sanctuary in Collier County. You saw, you listened to that segment, and then you notified me by way of text. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So I get the text message, and I'm reading it, and I'm remembering who Barbara was. Barbara and I know each other going back 5-6 years ago when she, at that time, now she's moved up to Stuart, Florida, had left Animal Aid, Tamara Gibson DeMello, and was then working, what was your title, with Murta Maltos?
Oh, I was volunteering there. I eventually became the adoption coordinator for that rescue down in Homestead.
So I would, I guess, I don't know, was it the donations from the biscuits from PetMed that you would come to my home in Davie, Florida and pick up the donations? What was it that I was giving you to drop off? Okay.
You had just accumulated some crates and things like that. And since we live close together, that's how we first met. I had gone over there to pick them up, and that's how and when we met initially.
Mm-hmm. And I remember because I used to go over to the Humane Society, and they were kind enough to give me crates. Those I would gather up for Murta as well as Kathy Kramer. And then also I would take trips up to Pompano Beach and do the PetMed run and deliver them to rescues. So Barbara knew me, and I get a text from Barbara because she had listened in on the podcast, and I said I have to reach out to her. So we spoke a couple days ago, and I asked her if she would come onto the radio show coming up this Wednesday. She's unable to. She's going out of town on Tuesday, but she agreed to have this interview with me now on a Sunday. So, Barbara, thank you so much, and I appreciate you taking the time away from your husband to do this.
No problem.
I want you to please begin by saying how you got involved with Animal Aid, at what time frame this was, and how long you were with her for. So go ahead. We're all ears.
I would estimate that I probably started volunteering there somewhere around the second quarter of 2011 and probably stayed there through the middle to the end of 2012, I would estimate, volunteering at Animal Aid in Broward County.
And at that time, she was still currently in Oakland Park, or was she at another location?
No. She was in the location in Oakland Park over there off Prospect. I think they're still there now, off Prospect and 6th in that general area. That's where the the shelter was that I went
what
to.
What were your duties? What were your duties and obligations as a volunteer at that time?
Well, pretty much everything, because there really weren't too many clearly defined duties ever. But I mainly, you know, did adoptions. I did a lot of paperwork and laundry, always laundry, because you'd get there and everything was always a mess. So, you know, that was a lot of the problem with the chaos. There really weren't too many clearly defined duties, and people just seemed to come and go, and you never know who was coming or who was going to be there. And, you know, sometimes you'd be there by yourself with 30 or 40 dogs, and sometimes there'd be, you know, 5 people there, 10 people there. And it's like the times just really young girls would show up, and they just sit around on their cell phone, you know, for the most part. But it was pretty chaotic.
When you would go there, would Tomorrow be there and give you different orders of what to do for that given day, or was
it
pretty much
even? No, very rarely would you ever see her, very rarely. And if you did catch her there, she would always be in a big hurry to get out of there. Never wanted to talk to you about anything. So very rare to see her. And like I said, you just went in the door and you just started doing whatever needed to be done, which, like I said, was usually tons and tons of laundry, cleaning up, messes, you know, in the dogs' cages and, you know, that type of thing, and letting them in, letting them out, you know, dealing with patrons that were coming in to look at the dogs, to view them, just, you know, answering the phone, a lot of times answering the phone. So, never knew,
but
all the time.
So who was really, like, managing the place besides maybe
on
just
different
the
days, there were different people. There were one or two people that were in charge, and, you know, I don't know if I want to name their names at this point in time. I can tell you, you know, after our conversation, but they were there a lot of times, coming and going, but most of the time, you know, you knew the hours, the time the shelter was open.
I want to ask you about something that you discussed with me 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That apparently animals would get operated on,
mm-hmm.
and because she refused to put the dog in a cone, which I like to refer to as a lampshade, what would you find in the morning going in there?
Well, that was a big problem. There were times when I'd come in and people were there and say, you can't go back in that room. And I'm like, why? Well, there's kind of a mess. And then I'd find out the cleaning lady would come in really early, like 5-6 o'clock in the morning, and these dogs would be brought back up from the mobile clinic, or down from the mobile clinic in Boca. There were certain spay and neuter days, and they would be just put in the shelter at night, no cones, no nothing, no pain meds either, more than likely, and they were left with no supervision there. And on several occasions, they would chew their stitches out, and apparently this particular time that I'm referring to, there was, like, you know, unfortunately, you know, intestines and things, like, out. And one of those managers who I previously referred to was called. He ran in there, got the dog, called his friend who was cleaning up the mess, and had to rush it to an emergency vet. But those dogs never, ever had cones on them. And they were left overnight with no human beings watching them after being in surgery, which was not very kosher, in my opinion.
In my opinion as well. I mean, you have dogs, especially the female, which is a lot more of an invasive procedure, being spayed. These animals have to be kept calm, sedated, restrict on their activity. But more importantly, they need to make sure, and the veterinarian would assume, give these instructions that this particular dog needs to have this cone on their head for the next 4 to 5 days to prevent them from ripping out the stitches. So I want to know, this is supposed to be a rescue that is, you know, going out there and spay and neutering these animals. Coming back, they have to go lay in a cage and have no one tend to them.
Right.
No one is there to make sure. So then the next morning, because now they figure the anesthesia is wearing off, they're getting more alert. They've got these foreign bodies sticking out of their abdomen, which are the sutures, and they rip them out.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you, okay, so that's one scenario. Let's talk about the time where it wasn't the dog's fault. Mm-hmm. You got bit. I want you to tell the listeners about that, please.
Right. Well, and again, it was not the dog's fault. The cleaning lady had inadvertently put a small dog in one of the little, they weren't really crates that she has. They're little, like, stalls, for lack of a better word. And they had little gates on them, but the gates had, like, wire mesh in them. Well, she put this small dog in one of the stalls that was in disrepair. And so toward the end of the day, we were letting the dogs out, and that dog started to squeeze out. Well, it was a small dog. It was like a little Yorkie or whatever. And he was actually getting adopted that day, later that day. He impaled himself. His leg got stuck through one of the wires, and he's screaming, of course. So I'm there trying to pull his leg out. So he's turning around and biting me. So, and I understand that it's not his fault. He's scared. Well, he bit me like right on one of my veins, and it got a little messy. It was like, you know, squirting, like every time my heart beat, you could just see it like on the wall. And I'm like, oh. And there happened to be another little volunteer girl there that day. I said, hey, run in the back and go get, I won't mention her name either. She was back in the cat room BSing with one of her friends. So the other girl was there a lot. She was one of Tamara's right-hand people. She comes in and she sees the blood everywhere. And I'm like, look, you know, whatever. So she calls the paramedics, which they came. I was getting a little dizzy because I was losing a little bit of blood there. And so they came and bandaged me up, and, you know, that was all fine. Well, she called Tamara, like, immediately. Right after she called the paramedics, she called Tamara. I heard her on the phone with Tamara. I never heard from Tamara. Tamara never called me to find out if I was okay. I just think she was so worried about getting sued. But I will tell you this. In under an hour, her handyman was there, and he took off that whole gate and repaired it and buttoned it up like nothing was wrong. They were more worried about that. I'm sure she thought I was going to expect her to pay for something, God forbid, or sue her. And that was her concern. I never heard from that woman about my injury, ever. So
you're telling me that this incident occurred, you're bleeding, 911 comes, the girl calls Tamara, who is the founder of Animal Aid, and she never picked up the phone to say, oh, my God, Barbara, are you okay?
Nope, never, not once. But her handyman was there in under an hour. He was there probably 45 minutes fixing. Mm-hmm. It tells me that, you know, that's all she cares about. It just tells you where her priorities are.
So. And this is going back to 2011 to 2012.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's talk about how you, among other volunteers, have stated the same story, where you brought in your own cleaning supplies because she always cried poverty.
Right. Or I'd get there and there'd be tons and tons of laundry to do. I'd have to run out to the store and buy detergent, paper towels, you name it. You'd get there and you couldn't do anything because there were no cleaning supplies. So we'd go run out and buy it and pay for it. So
with your own money.
Yeah, you never got reimbursed. In fact, it was like she really didn't pay people. And the other thing was there'd be volunteers be stealing things from there. And I'm like, what are you doing? And these were paid employees because she did have to pay a few people, you know, to clean and do things. And there's this guy and he's like wheeling the chair out from the back office. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm taking this. I said, put it back. It's not yours. He goes, well, she never pays me. She hasn't paid me in a week. So it was like, you know, people were just taking whatever they wanted. Because I think they just obviously felt that it was due them and they were just very upset because she wasn't following through on the pay that she had promised people and they were putting in hours there and not getting paid. So they were just taking whatever they saw, you know, dog food for their dogs, office chairs, you name it. You know, they took
Didn't you tell me they were also going into the desk drawer where there was money? And helping themselves to cash.
It's like there was an adoption, I'd put the money in there, and they knew. There were certain volunteers that knew where the money was, and they just go in there and take it. And I'm like, what are you doing? Oh, Tamara said I could take some gas money or whatever. I'm like, okay, well, whatever, you know. So that was going on.
What happened after you are spending your own money for cleaning supplies, no laundry detergent, and let's face it, you know, when you have that many dogs, you've got a ton of laundry to do on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
What was told to you when she would always say, well, she didn't have the money, or did she ever actually come out and say, I don't have the money for that? You know, what was her excuse?
No, because she was never really there. I mean, she just wasn't there. So you just go do it. You know what I mean? You do it, and I just keep the receipts and consider it a donation. But that doesn't go very far. That's not really the point because, you know, I found out after a while that there was quite a bit of money coming in because a guy that she was quote-unquote dating at the time who saw her tax report that she had to file for her nonprofit, it was over $500,000, he told me, which didn't really surprise me because I knew she was, you know, into the pity parties and had all these people signing up online to do the monthly donations. You know, she pushed real hard for all that. And her donation, I mean, her adoption fees were not cheap. And she really wasn't doing a whole lot of vetting because she was taking all the dogs out of Miami-Dade where, you know, 95% of them were already vetted when they came up. That's why she took them out of Miami-Dade, not Broward.
I mentioned to you, and if anybody's listening, for those of that have been around a long time, there was a news segment that was done on animal aid. And I'm going to say at least 5 to 6 years ago. I remember it vividly. I've said this to you, Barbara. I've said this to Mindy. I remember that apparently she had gone down to MDAS, got this small dog, and come to find out it was a owner was looking for this dog. So she did the right thing and returned the dog. But somehow or another, that same segment, they went into animal aid, and they did a video. And I recall, and I believe that what I saw, I'll never forget it. If anybody can find that for me, you can send it to me, private message me on Inspector Bark Facebook page, or send me the link on my email, info@inspectorbark.com. They talked about how dirty of a facility animal aid was.
Filthy. Oh, yeah, roaches and everything everywhere. It was nasty.
And this is supposed to be a reputable rescue that's bringing in, back then, $500,000. We know now, and that's going to be another subject past this Wednesday, that she was pulling in well over $1 million. Let me just read to you. I have to always create a episode description. And for this one, for us chatting now, I wrote, Animal Volunteer Speaks Up About Animal Aid. And we've got a lot more coming forward. Tomorrow Gibson DeMello Sparkman is one shady individual in my personal opinion, crying poverty to her volunteers, forcing them to buy cleaning supplies, paper towels, etc., as she is rolling in the dough. Back in 2011 and 2012, Tamara Gibson DeMello Sparkman was pulling in over $500,000 in donation money, and she can't afford cleaning supplies? Tamara, you know what I think of you? You are one grubby, greedy scam artist. Too busy buying real estate and not wanting to pay for doggy cones after dogs were operated on? This volunteer witnessed how they would come in the next morning to find dogs ripped out their sutures and blood everywhere. Who recalls a news segment over 5 to 6 years back where they mentioned Animal Aid Incorporated was filthy and blood spots were scattered on the walls? Apparently, this scam artist never changed her evil ways. This is Inspector Bark's own personal feelings. This is my First Amendment right, and I will shout it out nice and loud to let others know to stop giving donations to this thief. Tune in also to Wednesday, March 14th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, part two of Animal Neglect, Cruelty, and Greed. So just so you know, Barbara, and I also encourage the people that will call in on Wednesday, please always mention that it is in your opinion or perhaps you believe it to be this way, because I'm telling you that they're going to march into a courtroom, pluck down $400 of most likely donation money to sue you because they want to keep your mouth zipped. I'll tell you something. People know me in the animal rescue world. They either love me or hate me, and I blow the whistle nice and loud, and we've got other people blowing the whistle nice and loud on Tamara Gibson DeMello. Now, let me ask you. I mentioned the name DeMello. You were there when she married somebody and became Tamara Gibson DeMello, were you not?
I believe that all happened during that time, yes. I mean,
okay,
she didn't personally tell me, but that was what going around in the shelter, that her name did change then, and that there was a guy there with that last name that supposedly that's who she married, what I was told, but.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah, that
we do know that
that,
that is one of her legal names.
Yes,
but
I
have found
apparently it is.
Yes, it is, and I have found, and other people have confirmed this, and it's public record. And the rumor has it. I don't know if this is to be true or not. This is hearsay, but she would marry, such as this man DeMello, who was there with his partner. She married possibly, for him to receive his green card. And I have been told that she would be paid and compensated thousands of dollars to marry this individual. Now, we don't know if that's true or not, but I have heard that in more than one instance ever since this whole story got exposed. So the other part I'm hearing from more than one person, Barbara, is that in her past life, supposedly, allegedly, she was a stripper. So this woman apparently has done a lot of hustling in her lifetime. And I am telling you right now that there are so many people that are angry, upset, that she has used donations for her own personal greed. And we've got real estate records, and that's going to be part three. This woman, in my opinion, deserves to be shut down and her butt thrown in the slammer. I have no tolerance, and people know this, I have no tolerance for people that claim they're an animal rescue only to be in it to benefit themselves financially. What are your thoughts about that, Barbara?
I mean, I agree entirely. And again, for the amount of time that I spent there, Tamara was usually not around very much, and, you know, she really, the dogs didn't seem to be her concern, in my opinion. If I would have to call her or even see her and I'd say, oh, so-and-so about this dog over here, like Johnny, she didn't even know who the dog was. I'm like, he's been here for 2 months. He's this dog, like that. Oh, I don't know who you're talking about. I'm like, you know, so she didn't seem to be very familiar with the individual animals. And again, during the period of time that I was there, she just did not appear to be that involved with what was going on at the location, at the shelter there. Now, that's just my opinion, you know, but that was what I experienced for the year and a half or so that I volunteered there.
What about the dog that you actually ended up adopting from there?
She didn't. I'm like, well, you know, I have Angie. And she's like, well, who's Angie? I'm like, it's that little rat with the two cheery eyes. And she looked at me like, I don't even know who that is, but okay. I said, I think I'll keep her and adopt her. She's like, I don't even know who that is. I'm like, okay, well, she was only there for 3 months, but all right. So, I mean, and granted, there are a lot of dogs that come and go, but still, you know, if you were around much, I think you would kind of know who they were. You know, because we'd have to give her the papers at the end of the day when they were adopted, like, you know, here's the files, here's the money, whatever, you know. Well, actually, no, we were just told to put it in the drawer. It was just like, okay, take the application and, you know, clip the money, the cash, clip or the check to the paperwork and put it in the drawer. And so, you know, that's what was
you
being
know,
done.
When you are a founder of a rescue, in my opinion, your job is to run that as a business. You are to market, you are to network, and you are going to provide the best possible care for those animals and to find them the best forever home. Also, forever home.
No,
I know what you're going to say right now. That's what I want to expand on, Barbara. It is the rescue's responsibility to do home checks, and you're telling me she did not do home checks?
No, not in my experience. I was never instructed that those needed to be done, because people could come right in to the location, you know, view a dog and adopt the dog right there on the spot. It happened all the time. I mean, you know, No, that was not in every other, well, not every other, I can't say that, but in other, you know, rescue groups that I volunteered at, that was a requirement. That was, you know, that's a deal breaker. You had to do them, period, end.
It's a necessity,
you learn a lot.
And it's a priority,
absolutely,
and it's something
is.
That should be done. I will tell you that, you know, these shelters are trying to make their numbers look good, and they're trying to bring their numbers down when it comes to euthanization. So they're letting these dogs go out the doors, and they're letting them out to irresponsible rescues. In my opinion, that is what Tamara Gibson is, an irresponsible individual that has taken many dogs, from what we're finding, and killing them if they're not deemed adoptable. Okay? And we will have Joyce and Michelle. Mindy Lee did a fantastic video. It's on Mindy Lee's Facebook page, interviewing these two ex-volunteers. They did a fabulous job. They'll probably be coming on the show Wednesday night. And you will hear Joyce's story about a little chihuahua named Choichi. Choichi, I think the name is. Heartbreaking, okay? I find, and Mindy said it perfectly last Wednesday night, and all these, excuse me, I'm getting over bronchitis, all these episodes are recorded. She said that she felt in the 5 years, and she was with Tamara for 5 years, and was there every Saturday with her daughter, spending hours and giving money of her own to help for the animals. And she has been betrayed, and she feels tremendous guilt of what has transpired and what she's seeing. And thank God she's blowing that whistle nice and loud. Getting back to what I wanted to say is that Mindy said something that she felt in the past couple years, that Tamara basically just lost her heart and soul into it. It's like it didn't matter to her. And when you have lives at stake, if you get burnt out, then you throw in the towel. But don't you dare keep on taking in donations, pulling in $1 million a year, not to put that money where it matters, and that is for the animal's well-being. First and foremost, that is your responsibility. And apparently it wasn't the case with Animal Aid.
Yeah, well,
we have about two minutes, Barbara, and I'm going to wrap it up. Is there anything else you can share with our listeners? What advice do you have if they wanted to consider possibly volunteering, or better yet, donating? What advice do you have for them?
Well, you know, it's just really difficult. You need to try and go visit these places, you know, more than once or twice. Talk to the other volunteers that are there and just gauge things. But, you know, come back different days, different times. You know, it's difficult, but go out and try and help animals. You never know. But obviously, if you do see things, you need to speak up. Apparently, you know, it's been many, many years since I was there, and it appears that things have gotten progressively worse, unfortunately. But, you know, it's just an industry, quote unquote, that isn't really regulated. And we see this happening more and more. I guess it's just real easy, unfortunately, to take advantage in this way, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on that note, we've got about a minute left. That's where I come in. I feel being a part of the animal rescue world and hearing, I get private messages sent to Inspector Bark on a regular basis, as well as the Dog Rescue Bad and Ugly page, okay? Not just in Florida, nationwide. And you're right. These rescues are not regulated. But if we have people like myself that are willing to speak up for the sake of those animals and help educate the public and make this a public forum, people do come to me, and they are strictly held in confidence when they do send a private message. So with that note, we've got 30 seconds. Barbara, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it so much. We are going to take this segment and put it into Wednesday's interview, and we're probably going to have a part three segment. So on behalf of the animals out there, thank you for being a voice, Barbara, and you have a great day.
Thanks, Darcy. Good luck with
my
project.
My Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.